Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of the Arrow Digital Strategy Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be talking to Lisa Leahy, who for many years was the Sales and Marketing Director of the Hayfield Family Collection. This consists of three family-owned luxury independent hotels, Hayfield Manor in Cork, and in Kerry, the Great Southern Killarney and the Killarney Royal. Lisa has recently set up her own company, Brandley Marketing, that's Brandley with a double L, and as you will hear, she has a very hands-on approach to marketing, and for her, everything is geared towards selling. As well as discussing marketing in general, Lisa has great insights into the importance of understanding how marketing can drive direct sales for hotels, particularly around using your own email database. Further to that, we discuss how crucial your brand is to marketing and the importance of delivering on your brand promise. She also has a great example using Nike and Hyatt on how you can perform a quick sense check on how strong your brand is. I started off by asking Lisa to give us a brief resume of her career before delving into her insights from years of experience in luxury hotel marketing. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for doing this.
Hello, Richard. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, yeah. I know you from when you were working as the marketing director for the Hayfield Family Collection. You have now set up your own company, Brandley Marketing.
Correct.
So can you give us a bit of your backstory, Lisa? How did you get to where you're at now?
Speed version, I did hospitality at Shannon College of Hotel Management and quickly learned that it was very hard work on the front line. So I moved into sales fairly rapidly and I spent about 20 to 25 years now in sales and marketing. So kind of, I suppose I see myself mostly as a salesperson who does marketing, but I suppose they're obviously interconnected. So I worked in London for a while, sales director for the Forte Crest at Heathrow, and then for Park Plaza Hotels in central London. And then I had my own business in Spain where I set off and opened a beachside cafe for a few years and then home called. So I came home and started working for Hayfield Manor and then spent the last 14 years working for that company. So Killarney Royal Hotel and more recently then the family that owned the company bought the Great Southern in Killarney. So in the end, I suppose I was running the sales and marketing team for the company. We had about 18 people in sales and marketing, and we worked with Arrow throughout that whole period. So I suppose I know Arrow very, very well, and particularly Alan, the owner, and especially Kira, our account manager, who I think actually was with me at least for, I'd say, 13 of those 14 years. So she's probably overjoyed to finally got rid of me.
Well, it's good to have that connection, isn't it? You know, yeah, it's nice. It's lovely that people can work together, have that relationship for that period of time. And so what made you take the leap into starting your own company?
I suppose it was the timing of it. Obviously, the pandemic hit and everybody, well, a lot of people kind of reassessed where they're at. And I suppose over the years, my interest in marketing really, really grew. And my love of the design side and the digital side of marketing, you know, it was a real kind of passion for me as opposed to the being out on the road, traveling the world, knocking on doors. I suppose I could see over the years how it's changed for the industry and how you can achieve so much by literally sitting at home, which is the case now for a lot of people, or at a desk, and how much connection you can make. I mean, saying that, you know, like Kira and I at Arrow worked together for 13 years. I think I met her twice in that period, physically. Do you know what I mean? But we were talking all the time. So, you know, and we had such a successful partnership that I really believe in digital and that, you know, you don't have to be globe-trotting to become successful. So I decided to, so during that time, one of the difficulties in my role was always the you know, marketing. I'd know what I wanted to say, I'd know what I wanted to do, and then I'd be using a graphic designer to, or, you know, somebody else to put that vision together. So that was kind of, over the years, became a bit of frustration for me. So I just retrained myself in that over the kind of lockdown period. I took the time to do the Adobe, you know, Creative Cloud, And then I did a website for my sister and some other friends. People who didn't want websites at all were getting them from me, basically. I was like, you need a website.
So rather than doing the whole sourdough and banana loaf thing, you were doing websites.
Websites for people who didn't want them.
Yeah.
Discovered that I really loved that. I really loved doing that. And it was always a passion of mine. I mean, working with Arrow over the years as well, like that direct connection through the website was the most important channel for me personally, and that performed above everything else for me was a success for our brand, because it was people coming to us directly. And I suppose what I'm doing now is that I'm working with small, I suppose my business is emerging, but I'm working with small to medium enterprises, sole traders and things like that, who don't have a marketing department, who can't afford to have one, and who are really busy running their own businesses, and there are a whole range of businesses, and they kind of come to me to help with marketing strategy. And then I put together, you know, I do an audit of their marketing and their sales channels and all that. And then I put together a plan for them, and then I work with them to action the plan. So that's what I'm doing now. So it's very similar to what I did before, but different because it's different industries, which is very interesting for me. And I suppose there's a lot on the design side and the website as well.
That sounds great. So it's kind of like a direct action thing, isn't it? You're taking them on, doing the marketing, and then doing the actual process of what needs to be done as well.
Yeah, and it's actually today now I'm working on a project for a tourism client, and I'm doing up the report for them, but I just want to start doing the stuff, you know. Yeah. But I know I need to show them what needs to be done first, but I'm just like, oh, I just wish I could just change this here now. And that's the amazing thing, and you know yourself, with digital, it's so instantaneous. It's so lovely. You know, you think, I'll just change this. And then suddenly you've changed it and it's actually working. So I just love that about the whole digital side. And I suppose I also see it as a very sustainable way of marketing as well. Like when I first started in hotels, I don't even remember the first hotel even had a website. You know, it's that long ago, and email was dial up and everything was brochures. And I know at the Hayfield Family Collection, we very much kind of stripped right back on all print materials, you know, in line with our sustainability policy. And in my own business, I haven't printed business cards, and it's kind of a personal thing for me that I am, you know, I'm going to do as much digitally as possible, because I think it's a more environmentally friendly way to do marketing.
I agree completely. Yeah. You know, I haven't met anybody face to face for 16 months. I'm delighted to hear you say that. And also, I was interested because I come from a sales background, and I was a bit of a marketing skeptic in the past. And I've definitely come round to marketing, and branding. You know, I think it can work really well. Mm-hmm. And so you said that you're doing more general marketing now, you're not doing specifically hospitality. Is there a difference? Is marketing for hotels a subset, a specific set of requirements, or is it a completely different thing?
No, I think there are similarities. Now, maybe that's that, you know, I'm coming from my experience, and so maybe I'm just imprinting that on what I'm doing for other clients. But there was part of me, and I've always said when I retire, I'm going to become a car saleswoman. And I'm going to go into one of those, fancy car sales places with the guys with the shiny suits, and I'm going to sell more product than any of them when I'm like, you know, 75 or something. So yeah, I definitely have sales in the blood. So I suppose what I'm coming from a marketing perspective, is everything that I do is to drive sales for clients. And there's different types of sales, you know, obviously for hotels, it's rooms and meeting facilities and, dining. But for another client, who's flooring, it's about selling, you know, their luxury vinyl tiles. And so it's interesting selling a product, but the core principles are, as far as I can see at the moment anyway, exactly the same. I suppose what's nice is that it's more instantaneous maybe with selling a product, because you actually see the sales, whereas the service industry is more kind of long-term. So you're working on things maybe 2 or 3 years down the line, especially at the kind of level that I was at in the end, large contracts and things like that. And that, I suppose, is what really grounded me with the business with Arrow, was that it was a lovely connection to the actual booking transactions that you would see the reports every day, and you would see, oh my God, look, you know, we bought in this much yesterday, we bought in this much the day before. Because when you are working on strategy and that, you're a little bit more removed from the day-to-day sales and the actual customers coming into the business. So I always loved the daily reports from Arrow, so I could see, you know, and especially, I suppose, if we did anything like email campaign or something like that, you'd see the spike. And I'm seeing that actually with clients I'm working with now, where a lot of it is going back to basics for these clients who've never done anything, who've never really done any formal marketing before. You know, they're running their own business, they're busy doing that. They're very busy now because business has reopened. And, you know, they maybe had a website that was thrown up 2 or 3 years ago, which hasn't been looked after, well, not looked after, but, you know, hasn't been minded. Yeah. So I'm kind of going back in, looking at that, updating things. But ultimately, I suppose it is about the message and what you do and who you're targeting, who your customer is. And the most important thing is that they understand what you can do for them. And that's simple as it is, I suppose, when I do an audit or something like that, that's what I look at. Who is the target customer? Can they understand what you do by looking at your digital presence and your physical presence? And is it compelling?
That's great. That sums it up very nicely. Yeah. So the who, what, and why, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, because this is interesting in the hospitality space, well, hotels particularly, is with the OTAs, Lisa. So a company that sells widgets, for example, generally has to do their own marketing. The OTAs are, to a degree, doing marketing for hotels. You know, they're up on their websites and they're pushing them. The problem is that when the sales come, the sales go to the OTA and not to the hotel. So what's your view on that kind of marketing sales disconnect with the OTAs?
A kind of evil of our industries. You know, my strategy was always to get direct sales and to use those OTA channels to drive people to our own channel, which, you know, was the Arrow booking engine. And there are a lot of very simple ways that you can do that, which means that people may find you on a third party site, but they then choose to book directly with you. And there is, you know, that is the ultimate goal, because that is your customer then, and it's not a third party's customer. You have their contact details, especially for hotels. And like, I suppose we were in the luxury end of the market. So, you know, we would call people in advance, find out what time they expected to arrive, find out if they had any special requirements, book their dinner for them, spa treatments. And you can't do that if it comes via a third party, because you don't have their details. Sure. So it's as simple as that. It makes, you know, the customer, and I suppose it was educating our customers as well, that their experience is better if they book direct with the hotel, because they have a relationship with us then. And we were very, you know, very, very successful in that at the Hayfield Family Collection. But it was a very much a strategy decision, and everything we did was around driving bookings to our own websites or direct through our own voice channels.
How did you do that? So if the booking came through an OTA channel, you were looking to grab that customer then for their next booking to go direct?
One of the key things was that we would make it more, before they ever booked on the OTA, we would make it more attractive to book with us directly. So in terms of rate parity, so right back to basics, we gave a very basic rate, a room-only rate to the OTAs. And we never, and then they would have to buy breakfast on top at the full rate, which was like, you know, 20 something euro. Whereas when you would look at our own websites, you would get that breakfast B&B rate for the same price. Yeah. So, you know, if anyone looked, they would figure out fairly quickly that there was a huge financial benefit coming direct to the hotel. And the benefit of that to us was that we weren't paying, you know, 18, 15, 18, 20% commission. We were paying a tiny commission, and we had a direct client that we could market to in the future, that we could know about, we could deliver on our kind of brand promise, and then we would have their contact details for future campaigns. So that was the kind of core strategy, was to do that. The other thing that we did was we never had any packages on third-party sites. Right. So all of our lovely discounted winter promotions or active retirement promotions, all of those were only and solely on our own site. So over time, people would know that our site was the place to go to get the best deal. And then we built up over the years a huge database. Earning those email subscribers was massively important to our marketing strategy because it was free and the people knew us. They'd used our business. They'd subscribed with us, so they liked it. And so when we would have a downtime or would be seeing a downtime coming or a gap to fill, we would send out a direct email with a great special offer. And sometimes it was a luxury special offer. Sometimes it was price-led, but something specific and unique to them that nobody could get anywhere else. And then the bookings would come flying in. And, you know, it was, just a fantastic free way to keep reconnecting as well with your audience. And we wouldn't do it very often. Like, I think they would know, we call them our priority club. They would know that when this email landed in their inbox, it was worth reading. So then when, just to answer your actual question, when people would book directly through the OTAs, I suppose it's about the experience, and that's where the brand comes in. The experience when they're at the hotel, they feel that they are, a customer of ours, and that we get that connection with them. I mean, at one stage we had, you had to log into Wi-Fi, so you had to put in your you had to put your email address in. It was like, oh, by the way, we're going to market you now. over the years, we just did so many different things to build our database, and that database was worth a fortune in the end. And I suppose the brand just delivered on the brand promise, you know, so customers, when they did come, had a good experience. We did a lot of cross-selling as well with the Irish market. Okay. I hope that answers the question, doesn't it?
Certainly does. Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, what it encapsulates is the value of it, but also, it's not a quick fix. It's a long-term strategy, isn't it? You have to commit to. So I just wanted to pick up on a couple of things that you mentioned there. One was right at the beginning of that, you mentioned about the Hayfield Family Collection. It's a high-end brand. It's a luxury brand. And then you mentioned a couple of times about delivering on your brand promise.
Yes.
So, I mean, this doesn't have to be about Hayfield or hotels, Lisa. Can you give me an idea of, how important branding is, and what it is? Because a lot of people just think, brand is the logo, for example. But, a brand promise is plainly much more than a logo. So what is brand? How important is it? And how might you measure the effect of it?
Yeah, I suppose for me anyway, I think brand is everything that kind of touches or gets in front of your target market. So it's from the people you employ to, your product, to the look of your offering, to every piece of communication that goes to those people, to the invoice that they receive afterwards, after buying from you. It's absolutely everything that represents your business is your brand.
Right.
And so it's far beyond brochures and websites.
Is it possible to make it clear to a client or a customer from your brand what kind of a company you are? Whether you're a general manufacturer or you're a high-end person or you're offering a specific service?
Definitely, I suppose. And that's what you have to do. To do proper branding, you have to make it clear. And that's interesting, actually. I suppose that's a lot of what I'm doing with my new clients now, is making it as clear as possible to their target customer what they actually do, because they know what they do.
Mm.
And they, but they express it in their own way. And then I come from the outside in, kind of going, I don't know what you do. How is anyone supposed to know what you do? Let's put it into like three bullet points, so people, when they land on your homepage, know what you do and know where you're positioned. I suppose it's a very simple proposition to the customer, and then how you express that to them. And then I suppose after that, it's about choosing very carefully the channels that you know your customer is engaged in, and selecting a few of those and doing marketing on those really, really well. And I think the awful situation that a lot of people get into, and I know I got into it myself, when you hear, oh, this TikTok or Snapchat or this has come up, and you're trying to do everything and you can't.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, and actually your customers a lot of the time are not there. They're not, so you have to find out what channels are they actually on, and then ideally go for the free ones.
Yeah. Okay, yes, that makes sense. Yeah, I like the sound of that. And so, for example, then, I mean, you know, with your most recent role before this, you know, at Hayfield, give us an idea of what channels the Hayfield Family Collection typical guest, if there was one, were on. You know, and you know, what was the channel, and what did you push out to them?
Yeah, I suppose the hotel industry is really interesting because I think anyone who doesn't work in it probably thinks it's fairly simple and straightforward. But it's actually, I think anyway, an incredibly complicated business because there are so many different channels and there are so many different channels that you could engage in so many different markets. And I suppose for us at the Hayfield Family Collection, they changed over the years, depending on the trading environment, depending on, you know, like when I first joined, it was 2007, so it was the time of the crash. So we, you know, coming out of the boom period, it was great. It was great timing by me. I always seem to start new things at the beginning of the end. You know, we had to redefine everything. We had to go after the corporate market. And that changed over time because the corporate market was very price sensitive. So we moved our strategy to the high-end luxury. And that's, I suppose, where we worked with Arrow on that, particularly on the domestic market. But a huge part of the market for us was international travel and North Americans. And we had affiliations. You know, we paid for affiliations with the likes of Virtuoso and Signature, who are luxury travel agent networks. So I suppose what we did practically no advertising ever, or anything that we ever did was done on contra. What we did do, though, was we paid to get ourselves in front of the right people. So we paid for access to those kind of luxury user groups that we knew could book us. So we had a lot of subscriptions and we were part of Preferred Hotels and Resorts and also Ireland's Blue Book, which was, you know, an enormous kind of brand for us to be part of, a luxury brand, family run, local. It, you know, it just tied in with our values. And I suppose that, just going to values, I think anyone starting or thinking about a brand, and I have to do this every day in my own new business now, is to think, what are my values? Why am I doing this? Why is this important? And we were fairly far in, I think, with the Hayfield Family Collection when, you know, the values were never articulated. We all kind of knew it and we all lived and breathed it, but we didn't know what it was. But we did do an exercise one time, and I would kind of highly recommend it for any organization, with a company called New World, who are based in Dublin. And we just did our, you know, what are our values? What do we stand for? And then after we'd done that, every business conversation we'd have or every decision that was made, you know, we would say, does this stand for our values? It wasn't about a quick win. It was about being honorable, doing things exceptionally. And that just underlay everything that we did. And again, I suppose it can be a personal values, I suppose, if it's your own business or an organization values. Your brand is part of your values or represents your values. I suppose it's the public way of expressing your values to the people that you want to have as your customers.
Great. That's great. So it's a benchmark against which you're measuring yourself. Really.
Totally. Yeah. And it's important for, like, the brand as well, I suppose. Sorry, I'm on a total roll now, Richard, but the brand itself is as much about your staff as it is about the customer, because your staff are the people who are representing your brand, and they have to understand and believe your brand. And you can do as much paid advertising as you like and as much, you know, marketing as you like and just pour money down the drain. But if those people who are delivering the service or the product are not living up to your values and your brand standards, then it's a complete waste of money. And okay. I think that's what we did very well at the Hayfield Family Collection. Like, we delivered the service, and that made it easy. you know, that made it easy from a marketing perspective because you were telling the truth. You know, you weren't trying to, and I suppose that's, some people think marketing is about spin and coercing people into buying and things like that, but that should never be the case. Like, I would never want to work for an organization that isn't honest and, you know, about what they deliver. And we all believed, you know, that we did represent a really great brand that gave value to our customers.
That's interesting, because when I mentioned earlier about I used to be a marketing skeptic, I think that was my perception of marketing, was it was spin. And what I've come to realize over the years is that when a brand is authentic, their message resonates so much better. Like, people are not daft. They can see when they're being spun to them in the main. And when something is authentic and really resonates, you know, amplifies the effect, it really does work. And I wrote a blog about marketing a few months ago during the lockdown. And something I'd picked up on was the virtuous circle, which is great brands grow great ambassadors grow great brands. It sounds a bit of a truism or a cliche, but I think it's probably true, isn't it, Lisa? It does work, the virtuous circle.
Yeah, it absolutely, it's kind of like marginal gains, you know, and that's what I honestly believe in. And I suppose with a lot of with a lot of my clients as well, I kind of think, you know, if you can just get a little bit extra out of the customers that you already have, it's so much better than spending thousands trying to grab the attention of the masses who have no interest in your product. And I suppose that's what the virtuous circle is all about. It's about that kind of, you know, continuous rolling of, you know, engaging in the right things with the right, you know, with the right people, with the right customers, that it continues to grow in a positive way. We definitely, you know, over many years at the Hayfield Family Collection had that, because we had a great management team and everybody was just pushing it that little bit all the time to be that little bit better. And the customers experienced that. And we had so much repeat business. And like I say, we had so much, we had such a brilliant database that when we needed them, we could call on the people in our virtual circle and they would come back to us, you know, or they would tell the mother-in-law or they'd book a voucher. And it really did work. And I suppose as well as that, it's about doing, I always think in sales and marketing, it's about working on 100 things and hoping that 10 of them come off, you know. So if you're doing enough, if you're active enough, you know, in a focused way, if you're keeping busy, always chasing the pipeline, and kind of trying to anticipate what's coming in the future and new opportunities and developing and progressing and, you know, embracing new technology and always just thinking, how can we just do this, just this little bit better? How can it be a little bit more efficient so that, you know, our frontline staff aren't busy trying to input this, but they're actually talking to our customers? So we did do a lot of investment over the years in technology to take, you know, to take away the chores from people so that they could spend time with the customer, and then the customer had a better experience and then they would recommend us. And I suppose one of our questions, obviously, in our reservations department was always, how did you hear of us? And the amount of it that was recommendation was just, I mean, it was fantastic, because that just showed that, you know, it worked, what we were doing worked. And it was, and when it works like that, your job is easier.
For sure, yeah. The next thing I have written down in my notebook is loyalty and advocacy. And you have pretty much nailed it there, Lisa, already. You know, I mean, retention, from Arrow's point of view, retention is the key to growth. It's not just Arrow's point of view. It should be any company's point of view. If you can keep the customers you have and add new ones, you will always grow. You know, and loyalty, and that, you know, getting people to advocate for you. And it's become a bit of a thing now, hasn't it? You know, a kind of family and friends test. You know, I think it really does work. And, you know, what you have said there, you know, backs that up.
For me, I suppose in my new small, tiny business, which is really just me, most important thing for me is to get referrals. Like, I don't have time to advertise. I don't have money to advertise. I'm committed to doing is, for anyone I'm working with now, doing a really good job for them, going above and beyond what they expect, earning their trust, and then asking them, you know, if you're happy, will you tell people about me?
Yeah.
You know, and that's my marketing strategy. I built a website back in February in a weekend, and to be honest, I haven't looked at it since. I'm a disgrace, but I just haven't had time to do it. But I kind of see that as a success, to be honest, because my strategy isn't to be on, you know, on Instagram selling my soul, or on Facebook showing what, you know, my children are doing in the garden. That is not what I am interested in, working with a small amount of really good clients who will refer me on to other people. So I've got my own teeny weeny little virtuous circle, hopefully starting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. Just going back to what you were saying before that, I mean, it must be a very comforting feeling to have that well of contacts in a company. You know, if there's a downturn, or, you know, like going the pandemic, for example, is a really good example last year. You know, hotels or any company that had a good database, even though they may have been closed, you know, could potentially do online sales to their database, or offer them vouchers or a special offer if you book now and stay with us in a year's time. I mean, it must be an enormous comfort to have that well you can dip into.
Yeah, and I suppose it's as well to respect that well. Do you know what I mean? Because we didn't do a lot of marketing to our database during the pandemic, because a lot of people were going through very, very difficult times with friends and families. So what we did do, and what was massively great feedback on it actually, was we just kind of chatted to our audience. Do you know what I mean? We didn't send offers. We didn't sell anything. We just did entertaining stuff, I suppose, especially on social. And we actually had a great time doing it because we had the time to do it, I suppose, for the first time ever as a team. So we had all, you know, we had like a gardening section, we had kids slot, we had Karen, who was our sales director, was traveling, you know, was doing interviews like this now across all the Cork tourism companies. So we had a really great and enjoyable time. And the feedback from people was that, you know, we were actually kind of, you know, entertaining them during lockdown, which was lovely, actually. And I suppose it's about that again. Our brand is not, the brand was not, it wasn't appropriate for the brand to be selling at that stage, but we were just keeping connected with our audience because they love us. They love the thought of getting back to hotels, and they wanted to support us. They knew it was a very hard time. The place was closed, you know, and it was just telling them our story of the time. So keeping connected, really, you know. And then, of course, when it was appropriate to start to market again, then we did that in a very low-key way, which is in line with our kind of, in line with the brand as well. Yeah.
You mentioned story there. I mean, it's something that we talk about a lot with all our clients. This really, I probably applies to travel and hospitality more than general marketing, Lisa. But do you think, or would you agree, that what people are looking for now from, particularly, I suppose, from higher end products, is that it's more than a stay, it's more than a night or in a room, it's more than dinner. It's some kind of experience, or, you know, they feel that they've been given a story that they can share with people, because, you know, whether it's on Instagram or through a conversation or back in a bar with their family when they get back to the States. Is that what you feel, that, you know, it's important to deliver?
Yeah, and it's, you know, and it's different as well for different clients. And I suppose it's, you know, the leisure client is one thing, but, you know, the business client, it's to know your customer, I suppose. Yeah. You know, I remember years ago we had kind of like a gaming company who had came and were using Hayfield Manor a lot. And their feedback was that we were just too friendly and, you know, just freaking out all their kind of computer nerds completely by greeting them. They just didn't want to be greeted, you know. And I suppose that was a huge learning thing for us, because it's kind of like not every customer is the same, and you have to understand what they are like and adapt and, you know, adopt a different strategy for them. The hotel business is all about experience, you know. It is all about experience. The product is one thing, and people expect to have a bed and a TV and that. But what will help you and your marketing and your business to grow sales is if you provide a unique experience for people. And that can be, you know, that you're the friendliest 3-star bed and breakfast in Killarney, or, you know, that you're the best 5-star hotel in Ireland. And I've stayed in some of the best 5-star hotels in Ireland, and sometimes the experience in the 3-star bed and breakfast is more warm and fuzzy, you know?
Yeah,
I think that's what Hayfield Manor, particularly, what was always done very well was the experience the customer had. And you would travel, you know, the world, or when I used to, and anyone who had clients who had stayed at Hayfield always mentioned the staff. you know, and that's what's so key about the hotel and hospitality industry. It is about the people. And at a certain level, people expect five-star products. What they don't get everywhere is the five-star service and a bit of humanity with it and authenticity, like you said. That's how you differentiate yourself.
When we did the website, the new website for the Great Southern in Killarney, Lisa, the video on the homepage is it's a journey into the hotel, but it's all hotel staff that you see. And you can plainly tell that they're not actors. You know, they are hotel staff, and you go through the restaurant and there's somebody at the bar and then there's somebody at reception. And so many people, other clients, have commented on that video.
Really? Yeah. That's lovely to hear. Yeah.
So, you know, you can see it's a high-end establishment. It looks fantastic. You can see that there's a lot of people there. And, you know, when you've got more people, you generally get better service. But those people look really friendly and engaging and happy to see you. It's a great video, I have to say.
It's funny you say that, because I know about this, the staff side of things, but for whatever reason, about a month ago, I was talking to Karen, the sales and marketing director, and she was like, oh, I just landed on the Great Southern's, you know, she works for our company. Mm. Oh, I just landed on the Great Southern's homepage. Oh, I love that video, you know, and... It's genuine, I suppose. It is genuine, and that is what you get at Great Southern. And there's nothing like video. Video is such a powerful marketing tool, I think. And you know, when it's done well, and it's done, you know, it's short enough, and it just captures that essence of the place. And you know, you can do that better with video than with anything else, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I agree. Which is one advantage of hotels, I guess. I mean, from a general marketing perspective, Lisa, I mean, if you are working with a company, I don't know, like an engineering company who make nuts and bolts, it's much harder in that case, I guess, to try and get across the experience or the authenticity, because everybody knows what a nut and a bolt is, you know, or a tin can or a cardboard box, you know.
Yeah, but I suppose it's about like what's different about your organization, you know. And if you're making nuts and bolts, they're probably similar to other nuts and bolts, but maybe, you know, the difference is the person who's standing by the machine that makes the nuts and bolts, and the personality of the brand, I suppose. That is what will differentiate you. I was just listening to something before we came on, and I think it was Seth Godin who was saying, you know, if Hyatt Hotels tomorrow said they were going to start to make shoes, no one would know what they looked like. But if Nike said they were going to open a hotel tomorrow, we'd all want to go there, you know. Yeah, yeah. And that is the power of an amazing brand, that they could do. They could turn their hand to anything. If Hayfield Manor started to make nuts and bolts tomorrow, they would be amazing nuts and bolts because... because the brand is amazing and the people in it are amazing.
Okay, that's really interesting. Yeah, I'd never thought of it like that, but that is a really good point. So kind of like the definition of a brand power almost, isn't it? You know, if you turn your hand to something else, you will still get the same benefits and experience and service, but just for a different product.
Yeah, and that's the power of a brand, isn't it? Yeah. That people will choose your brand because they like you and what you stand for. And I think especially with the next generation coming up, you know, they will, there's facts and figures, I can't remember them, but, you know, they will go for sustainable brands over other brands. You know, the brand is really important to the next generation. Whereas, you know, maybe for us, it would be, you know, oh, it's that, you know, that nut and bolt is the same as the other one over there. I'll just take whatever. But they'd be like, well, who made that? And like, who's working for them? And what are the conditions like in that factory? You know, which is great. It's great that that is the case.
Yeah, I agree.
Suppose if you have a factory with great conditions and where you're treating your workers properly, you have to, you know, that is a marketing advantage now.
Yeah, and I think that all ties into, again, to why I'm a bit of a convert to marketing, because it actually involves a lot of words that should be important to people on a personal level, like respect, nurturing, authenticity, you know, bringing people along with you, empathy. It's all tied in, isn't it, Lisa?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think over the years, I've really started to recognize the huge power of the brand and the importance of getting it right. And just, you know, the brand is what you stand for. The brand is everything that you stand for. And hopefully you stand for something that's good. and I suppose if you really believe in your brand and what you stand for, if there are elements of your business that aren't that good, you will look to change those and to be better, you know. So it is kind of, and I suppose maybe it's the time in our lives that we're all in where, you know, we're, you know, everybody's been through the global pandemic, so we're all questioning why we're here and all, you know, what's important in life. You know, we spend so much time in work that, you know, working for somewhere that you believe in and that you have shared values with is essential. And spending your hard-earned money and your precious leisure time in a property that doesn't align with your own values is not going to work for people. So people will choose a brand that they believe is a good brand.
Okay, that's great. That's a really good summation, I think. And it's interesting, it ties in with something you said earlier. You know, I mean, our experience at Arrow is with hotels, and a lot of it is about acquisition of customers. And, you know, people pay for Google ads and Facebook ads, and they're doing PR and press. And you just think how foolish to spend all this time getting a customer in, and then your receptionist lets everything down when the person walks through the door by not being friendly or, yeah, you know, as you say, not aligning to brand values. I know that sounds a bit dry, but if somebody's rude or impolite or doesn't reflect what you've offered up front, you've lost that customer, haven't you?
Oh, completely, yeah. And plus, they'll go and tell everybody.
Oh, God, yeah, even worse.
You know, that's exactly what you don't want. And I suppose that's something, I suppose, in our industry, it's the arrival and the departure that are the most important parts of the customer experience. And if you get either of those wrong, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure, really. I suppose you're setting yourself up, if the arrival is wrong, you're setting yourself up for failure during the stay, and you're always on the back foot afterwards. Mm. And if the departure is wrong, you're setting yourself up for failure because you're not going to get that person back again.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've worked hard. Like, it's hard work. This industry is seriously hard work. So, you know, the least you should expect is that when people leave, that they're happy to recommend you.
Talking of leaving, I should wrap this up because I've kept you for long enough, Lisa. I just wanted to ask you, what's next for Brandly Marketing, and will you be working with any hospitality clients, or are you trying to not do that now?
I work with anybody who has who has values aligned with my own. I'm going to be very selective about who I work with.
Well, I wish you all the best with Brandly.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I've really enjoyed, it's been a great chat, and enjoyed the podcast. So I wish you success with it. And obviously all my ex-colleagues at Arrow as well, who are just brilliant to work with over all the years. A complete pleasure to actually talk about knowing your customer. Like, even in the darkest days of the recession, you know, Alan stayed in the 5-star luxury market, stuck it out, and delivered 5-star service. This sounds like an ad now for Arrow, but I genuinely mean it. Like, he stuck by his values as an organization. Arrow stuck by their values, and a very niche client base. And we certainly benefited from that over the years. So thank you for the opportunity to chat.
You're very welcome, and thank you. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day, Lisa.
No problem. Anytime.
All the best. Okay.
Thanks
a million. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Lisa Leahy, for those deep insights into marketing. You can find all Lisa's details on her website, brandlymarketing.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please follow or subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. In the meantime, take care, and thanks for listening.